there's a young boy and he's standing by the seashore and he's throwing all of the, there's starfish all over the seashore, and he's throwing them back into the sea. And this old man comes along and he says, you know, what are you doing? And he said, well, I'm throwing these starfish back into the sea. And if I don't get them back into the sea, they're going to die. And the man said, but there's so many of them. How can you ever make a difference? And the boy picked one up and he threw it in and he said, well, I made a difference for that one. And I think that's really the heart of Starfish Project.
Greetings, slow divers. We are back. It is Frida, your host, joined by my outstanding producer, Drew. How are you doing today? Have you looked at the sky, get your steps in, or have a minute to express gratitude for the loved ones in your life? Today on the Slow Dive, we're joined by Jenny McGee, founder and CEO of Starfish Project, a remarkable social enterprise transforming the lives of women escaping human trafficking and exploitation. Under Jenny's leadership, Starfish Project helps women experience freedom, rebuild their confidence, and establish economic independence through jewelry design, career development, and holistic care. What began as an act of compassion has grown into a global movement in which survivors not only reclaim their dignity, but also become leaders, designers, and change makers within the organization. For over 20 years, Jenny has lived and worked in East Asia, combining her deep empathy with strategic leadership to create long-term impact. With degrees from Bethel University and Harvard's University's Extension School, she has been recognized internationally as Social Entrepreneur of the Year by the Caring Group and Bethel University's Alumna of the Year. Jenny continues to live in Asia with her husband and children, where she leads Starfish Project in its mission to create freedom, independence, and opportunity, one woman at a time.
Greetings, slow divers. This is producer Drew with a quick interruption to let you know about a special offer just for our listeners. If you head on over to starfishproject.com and enter the promo code SLOWDIVE20, you can get 20% off your first purchase of $25 or more. This offer is active now through January 1st, so just in time for holiday shopping. Once again, that promo code is SLOWDIVE20. So now sit back and enjoy this incredible interview with Jenny McGee of Starfish Project.
Welcome, Jenny.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
No, thank you for joining us. And I see you're wearing lovely starfish earrings. And
of course.
I'm wearing a starfish necklace, which is a starfish. We'll dive right into our first segment, which is an icebreaker. Jenny, if you were a bird, what bird would you be?
That is a good question. Well, I quite like the dove. We actually do a lot of jewelry that is related to the dove. I just like the sort of peaceful meanings around the dove and the feelings of, bringing people together that I think the dove represents. That's probably the bird I would choose.
Nice. Yeah. Doves are definitely peaceful. And, you know, they go with everything. Like the color works. They go with the different palettes, all different color palettes.
It's true.
If you're accessorizing. Okay. What's a small ritual that helps you start or end your day with intention?
Yeah, that's really good. Well, I tend to, it's quite busy around my house, but I usually just spend some time in reflection. My husband has been pushing me to do more meditation, but I'm kind of a slow learner on this front. But I usually have some quiet time, say some prayers, and then kind of move forward with my day. So I found just kind of waking up in that way is really helpful. And then the chaos of the day begins.
Lovely, 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 lovely. Well, wonderful. Well, I know we're going to get right to it. Starfish Project. First of all, take us back to the beginning, Jenny. What moment or experience first inspired you to create the Starfish Project? And what was going through your mind when you realized this work had to be done? What is the origin story? How did you find yourself in social entrepreneurship in Asia doing this amazing work?
Yeah. So social enterprise wasn't something I expected to go into. I was actually an English literature major. But when I arrived here in the city, I started to see a lot of women and young girls who were being exploited. And so there was a small group of us that just kind of started to reach out as friends and see, kind of just coming alongside and seeing if there were ways we could build relationship with the women and girls that we saw, and also just if there was anything we could do to kind of help. And as I started to build relationship, you know, we actually did the first week we went, it was Easter weekend. And so we took some little eggs and some roses and gave them to the women there. And I found the next week when I went back, a lot of the women had the flowers, the roses that we had given them, hanging in the windows to dry. And some of them shared with me that nobody had ever given them a gift before. And that just really touched my heart. And as I got to know these women and girls, a lot of them were really young. They were around 16 years old, and a lot of them were very low education levels, but they were making money and sending it home so that their brothers could go to school. And that just really broke my heart, you know, just the inequality of maybe broke my heart and also frustrated me and wanting to see opportunities for these women and girls. I found most of them were incredibly intelligent, tons of potential, but nobody had really invested in them. And I think because of the value of girls still in the countryside, here, these girls had been sent in from their poor villages, sent into the cities, and needing to make money for their families, but also often supporting their brothers. So, yeah. And so we just really started Starfish Project out of a place of wanting to provide those opportunities. So out of the relationships with the women I met, we started this really small jewelry business with five women and me around a kitchen table. And I actually brought in some creative friends to help us work together to build some earring designs that we could make and start selling. And as I chatted with the women around the table, you know, the thing they were most interested in, jewelry, I presented different kind of items that we could make together. But everybody loved the idea of jewelry, and we had good access to the materials. And I also think it was very therapeutic. People were able to create things and express themselves through the jewelry that we created. And so we started so small, very grassroots, sending jewelry with friends who were going to their hometowns or, you know, selling to their little communities. And it just kind of kept growing from there.
The symbol of the starfish, how did you come up with the name? What's the meaning?
Yeah, so there's this famous parable. I don't think it's a true story or anything, but there's a famous story that's really touching. There's a young boy and he's standing by the seashore and he's throwing all of there's starfish all over the sea, all over the seashore, and he's throwing them back into the sea. And this old man comes along and he says, you know, what are you doing? And he said, well, I'm throwing these starfish back into the sea. And if I don't get them back into the sea, they're going to die. And the man said, but there's so many of them. How can you ever make a difference? And the boy picked one up and he threw it in and he said, well, I made a difference for that one. And I think that's really the heart of Starfish Project. When you look at the issue of human trafficking and exploitation, it can just feel so overwhelming. And I think people, you know, it breaks people's heart, but they don't know what to do and where to begin. And so I think just starting, you know, one by one, and even through simple acts like supporting our jewelry business or choosing where you buy your products and gifting those to your friends, that all can make a difference. And I think if we try to tackle this huge problem with, you know, most of us get like paralyzed by trying to figure out what the next step is. But just taking those little actions that make a difference, I think, is really at the heart of Starfish Project.
I love that. And I love how you started with a small group of women and just, like you said, it was therapeutic to create and to channel that energy. I think, like, I'm wearing your necklace, one of your necklaces today, which has the starfish. And I have to say, like, even the little gift box, it's just you know you're making a difference. Like, I'm reading this right now. For the first time in my life, I have felt valuable. And this is like one of the quotes from the production. And then your gift has changed my life. I was just thinking, you know, adornment, just feeling beautiful, and jewelry as just a way to also exemplify that. And that whole like starfish mission of like you've created this whole pipeline of it's not just an ethical enterprise in a storefront. You're actually built a whole system where it's like giving freedom and education. I just think jewelry is such a positive way to do it because everyone's a part of it. So I just want to, I think for me, that's the, one of the things I was like, wow, this is great. This is really good because now everyone can connect with feeling pretty and adorned, but then you're also making an impact. So I love that. So earlier you said you were a literature major and now you're a social entrepreneur. How has your literature major helped you in your social entrepreneurship? I'm just curious because entrepreneurship has very different pathways. It's so non-linear and you really followed your heart and you have felt the call to make this impact. But like, do you ever use any of that?
Yeah, well, I also had a writing focus. And I think when you're starting something, you have to do a lot of communication with people. So I definitely think that helps. But I always tell young people, you know, I think we get so stressed about like what our major is. And I'm like, at 18 years old, you have no idea what life will bring and what you're going to do. I mean, I would have never guessed I would be leading this social enterprise. So I don't think we should get so hung up on like exactly what we study, but I just think the process of learning and questioning and what I loved about literature is just the discussions about life and the deeper questions that we would discuss in the literature. And I think those are the things that those bigger questions have really guided me as I've started Starfish and led it all these years.
I love that because that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, you had inspiration, you had a call, you stepped up, you're like, you know what, let's create a solution. And that's the direction you went. And I'm glad you did because you're helping so many. Starting something as bold and human-centered as Starfish Project often comes from a deeply personal space. Was there a particular encounter or story that shifted your understanding of what freedom and empowerment could look like for women, especially since you were coming from America?
Yeah, I remember. So, you know, our outreach looks like there we go two by two and two women will go in and to brothels or to connect with women on the street and just build relationships. And so when we very first started, there was a young woman that I really connected with and we had a very similar experience. I had a 9-month-old baby at the time, and she was pregnant and she was having some issues with her pregnancy. And they were very much similar things that I had gone through during my pregnancy. And it was this moment of realization of like, we are really the same. She and I are the same with the same struggles. We were just born into different situations and born into different environments that led us down these different paths. And I think that deep connection with somebody and just realizing that people around the world, if we have much more in common than we have differences. And so I think just that realization that, you know, she was really in this terrible, terrible situation by no fault of her own, but just like the situation that she had been kind of the hand that she had been dealt. And so that just really spoke to me. And she and I had a deep connection. And she was one of the very first women to come to Starfish Project and help start this business together. But I think often for me, it really Starfish started out of relationship and that connection with other women. Now, I didn't necessarily start Starfish Project with this huge vision to like combat human trafficking. No, it was really out of meeting a few women that I really connected with and knew I can come alongside and together we can build something that will help a lot of other women have opportunities that they haven't had before.
Wonderful. Yeah. And I love what you just said. It's like, that's the unifying thing as women. Doesn't matter what part of the globe you're on. As a mom, you connected, but as a woman, as a human, like, yeah, there's really, we are a global community and there's a through line there when it comes to humanity and witnessing these challenges up close. What were some of the early, I guess, experiences like with Starfish when you first began? And what were like the first group of women that you helped? And how has it since grown since then?
Yeah, I would say it's changed so much. You know, the early years, if I look back, I always think, wow, it was a little chaotic, in part just because you're taking like people with high trauma in really difficult situations, and they were even like living together, and it was a big life change for the women. So looking back, it was pretty chaotic, and to be honest, none of us knew exactly how to start a business either. And but now over time, we've really worked to use Starfish Project to train survivors in all levels of our business. So now we have survivors who are accountants and graphic designers, photographers. Basically, everything we do in the business, we try to use as opportunities to train women into careers. And so now I think even if a woman is coming out and she is coming from a terribly difficult situation, she's coming into a very stable environment, a very stable, encouraging, positive environment. Also, I've seen over the years when we started, there weren't a lot of people talking about human trafficking and exploitation. But over time, we started to see like stats coming from other organizations. And we found a lot of organizations, the vast majority of the people that are able to help escape human trafficking and exploitation end up right back in that lifestyle. But at Starfish Project, we haven't seen that to be the case. I think we've had less than 5% of the adult women we help return into that lifestyle. And so we were trying to figure out why that is and you know, what the difference is. And I think because on day one, the women who come to us, they can see a real pathway forward. Women who are just like them, who may have only had a second grade education, but now they're leading a team of photographers, they're leading a team of graphic designers, and they see women who, you know, came from very similar upbringings, but now they're leaders and yeah, just doing incredible things. And so I think that gives women hope. You know, when we first started, even when we trained women, they weren't sure if women like them could achieve what we were training them into, you know. And, you know, even our original trainers, we would bring in outside experts, and we found the women themselves would be like, well, that's great, but you have a master's degree, you know, I can't do that. But now we have survivors training other survivors. And amazingly, I found when survivors train other survivors, the training actually goes much faster and is much more effective, because I think one, the trainer knows what is this woman's challenges, what are going to be her struggles. And also the woman receiving the training also knows that this woman came from a similar situation and she's able to achieve this. Maybe I can too. And so for me, I think what gets me so excited at Starfish Project is when you see a woman who achieved much more than she ever thought possible. And we have one woman here who she said to me one day, she's a photographer and she took a bunch of photos. And then one day she looked at some of the photos that she created and she looked at me and she said, I'm a photographer. And that was so amazing to see that light come on for her of like, I become something that I never thought I could become. And I, in that sense of accomplishment and pride for herself. So I think for me, that's been the biggest like growth over the years, is just seeing what the women have been able to achieve. We have women getting their CPA licenses. And to be honest, they far exceeded my expectations. But I think what's even cooler is when they exceed their expectations.
That is incredibly remarkable. And I think just your pipeline of like the encouragement, the empowerment, the workforce training, it raises the self-esteem or the confidence and gives women that. I think that is remarkable, Jenny. And I think that's one of the things that I think really like truly social enterprises, that's the impact that we want to see. It's like, okay, you took it a step beyond. It's not just, okay, you're employing survivors, but they're also now teachers and mentors and giving, paying forward. And I think that is what's so wonderfully unique about Starfish to me, that I'm like, this is something that just continues to give, paying it forward. And it must be incredibly rewarding on a daily basis when you meet with your peers and colleagues. I mean, how is that like when you what is a day at Starfish Project when you're working in development or in design with the survivors, or how does, what does that look like for you, Jenny?
Yeah. Well, I feel so blessed in my work because every day I get to watch and work side by side with people who are transforming their lives, you know, and that is highly motivating. I remember for me, even at some of like my, you know, darkest times or being discouraged, I remember one day in particular, it was right after like COVID had kind of passed for us. And here it was a very long, we had like 3 years of lockdowns and intense. It was very intense. And when it finally all passed, I think you kind of go on adrenaline for a long time. And all of a sudden I was like, man, I'm exhausted. And you start like questioning yourself. And then I went into a meeting and one of our survivors who is now leading accounting department, she started sharing for her like how incredible Starfish was. And it wasn't prompted from me. She was just discussing, but she said she was talking about how we needed to keep growing so we could keep impacting more women. And I just remember that amazing feeling of like, I was at a low point, needed encouragement, and it was one of the survivors giving like a motivational talk about why our work matters and why it's so important that I think is such a privilege to be in that environment where I get to see that every day. But we have, now in Asia, over 90% of our staff are all survivors of human trafficking and exploitation. And almost every one of our departments is led by a survivor, which I think is really exciting.
That is incredible. I mean, women-led social enterprise and women paying it forward and mentoring and then disrupting the cycle of trafficking, or at least alleviating some of it, right? Like, because
yeah,
you arrived in a region where human trafficking and exploitation can often remain invisible, which is also true for most places, hidden in plain sight. How did you first begin to see what was happening beneath the surface? Or what did you learn from the women whose lives have inspired this mission?
Yeah. Well, even over the years, we've watched the environment change. Like I would say years ago, it was very much in your face and it was easy to see. Now it's still happening all around us, but it's gone online or it's a little more underground. And so you don't see it as clearly, but it's still happening everywhere. And so actually these days, the women who are in our program are the most useful resources as far as understanding how things work and understanding the situation. And some of them just really have a heart to, you know, a lot of the girls still working in that space that are still being exploited are their cousins, their friends, their sisters. And so they really have a heart to see women getting helped. We actually recently have a young woman. We started an internship program because we started to see a lot of teenagers being exploited. And so we have a young woman who's 16 years old, and she shared with us that she had a lot of friends who were still being exploited and wanted us to be able to help them. You know, we always do have like limited resources. So we told her, well, why don't you make a list with all their names and then we can see what we can do and see how we can start reaching out to them. And she wrote down 49 names of her friends who were all between like the age of 16 and 18 who are being exploited. And I think that's just heartbreaking to see how big the problem is. And a lot of that's happening online and it's more complicated to find, but it's clearly still happening so prevalently. And so I think, that's heartbreaking. But like I said, with the mission, we just keep trying to affect one life at a time and not be overwhelmed by the size of the problem.
No, I mean, definitely the scope of the problem is big, but, you know, you're providing solutions and you're doing your part, which I think should be applauded and also encouraged by all of us, you know, whatever we can do, you know, to help any social issues or something such as human trafficking. Do any of the ladies, or especially the younger ones, do they even know they're being trafficked? Or have you, or is that like not a cultural thing, but like, do people in those situations, do they know that they are being exploited or it's considered trafficking, or they're just in like dire straits or in economic distress when they meet you? Or how does that look like? Because I know here in the States, it's a little bit different a lot of times, but I'm just curious to see in your region.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I go to a lot of conferences and connect with like leaders of organizations around the world working in this space. And I found this to be a very like common theme. I mean, it looks different in each place, but in general, I feel there's like a misunderstanding about human trafficking. And so I feel a lot of the women themselves, they don't realize until years later that that's actually what happened to them. Because usually the people who are trafficking them are close to them. It's it can be relatives. We have women who their own mother sold them into the human trafficking. We also, a lot of time it's friends or somebody, people come along and are very kind, and that's how they build their trust. And so what happens, I think, for the women in our program is when they come to us, they just blame themselves. Most of the time, they don't view themselves as somebody who's taken advantage of or tricked. Like they just think, oh, I hear women say all the time, oh, I was stupid and I just I trusted this person, and that's how they view themselves. And so we really try to help change that and change their view of themselves and help them understand that, you know, what happened to them was wrong. And but I think most of them really blame themselves. And I found whether it's in the United States or in Asia, I found most of the women, it's not until years later that they understand that they were trafficked. And it's interesting, we actually did a teaching at one point about human trafficking to the women in the program to explain, like, this is human trafficking. And what surprised us is some of them had been married after they came to Starfish Project. But, you know, they're also marrying men who are coming out of vulnerable situations as well. And what we found is a lot of them realized later, actually, my husband was trafficked too. They were trafficked for labor. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of them were in labor trafficking situations, but none of them realized that. They just thought, like, I didn't have, my ID was taken and I was never paid, you know, but they didn't ever view that as human trafficking. And so I think there's still a lot of education that needs to happen on all fronts, even supporters and our customers and supporters. I think sometimes we have a misunderstanding of even like what human trafficking is, and people are slowly tricked into things. And so it's not typically like what you see in the movie where, you know, somebody's kidnapped. That happens. But I would say most of the time people are just really like manipulated and in very vulnerable situations. So I think that's one reason we also really try to look at the how do we holistically care for the women, because you're far less likely to be in a vulnerable situation if you have education, if you have job opportunities, if you have health insurance, you know, all of those type of things will keep you out of the situation where you're in a place to be vulnerable and easily exploited.
I'm glad you said that. Yes, I think just the subject of human trafficking, it's a broader definition. People think it's only like sexual exploitation. It's also labor. It's also withholding wages, keeping your passport. And it's so very covert. It's almost like, you know, so you don't realize it. And I think the part that's kind of sinister and scary, and I don't know, I'm not a therapist, but like a lot of people who do get exploited, because I've met with some survivors, the trust, they build the trust from people that they know, and then they're being trafficked. And then once they've realized what they have undergone and years go by, then that trust, to regain that trust again and to go out in the world, it's challenging. I mean, when you say you take care of the survivors, you do, but like, how do you take care of like yourself and your company and like everybody who, like, is there a trauma-informed approach? Do you have a social worker that you work with, or someone that kind of guides the whole process from beginning to end, someone new who comes into the program, who someone's working and then gets promoted? What does that look like?
Yeah, we do have some trauma specialists that we work with. It is challenging, that whole space of trauma-informed care is kind of culturally new here, and it's a new space that there isn't a lot of like local expertise about that, but we're always like seeking out and trying to gain as much as we can. And then I think for our teams, we have three locations, three branches in each of our places where we try to build a real community among our support staff. And because I think you do see really hard things, and some of what you're engaging with every day is just heartbreaking, you know, and And even for myself and my other teammates, you know, we'll be going along and all of a sudden something just hits you. And, you know, I feel like I see terrible things a lot. And then all of a sudden one day I'm just crying about it. And it can come out sometimes when you're not expecting it. And so we just really try to make space for people to share. We do a lot of debriefings. Our teams, we have teams from our support staff, 2x2, and also women who come out of exploitation who feel desire to go back. We have teams that go 2x2 and just connect with the women doing outreach and building relationships. But you see a lot of hard things there. And so we always try to have debriefing times and supporting each other, because there's not a lot of people who understand like what it's like to go into those spaces and see what you see and experience what you experience. And like you said, also people really have a hard time to trust. And so I think that's challenging as well, where, you know, a lot of times people feel like, oh, don't you just go in and offer somebody a job and everybody just takes it right away? But no, because people have been tricked and exploited by the people closest to them. If your own mother betrays you, how are you going to go out and trust some random people who come in and offer you a job?
Yeah,
I remember at one point, one of the women in our program, years after she worked for us, she told me, you know, Jenny, I remember when I met you that day, we had met in a cafe somewhere when she came to work for Starfish Project. And so she said, I remember meeting you there that day, and I thought you were going to traffic me, but it was the best option I had at the moment. And I thought that's just so telling of the situation where a woman thought she was going to be trafficked, but I still looked like the best option for her. And it's really heartbreaking, but I think that's the reality of it's not like you offer somebody a job and they immediately want to take it. They have years of mistrust. But I think for the team, that can be hard to deal with, because you see people that you care about and love, and they're in a really bad situation and they don't come out of it, you know? And I think that can be really hard to watch.
Yeah, I'm glad that you do make time to debrief and you have that time to process, because I imagine it's such important work, but it's heavy work. And you still have to be this positive person at the same time for your team. So yeah, it is heavy work. It's important work. Could you speak to us about like what are some of the training look like for the survivors?
Yeah, so when a survivor comes to us, we do assessment first to kind of, one, make sure, like, is she healthy? Does she have any health needs? Does she have any emotional? Of course, she has emotional needs, but, you know, kind of evaluating where is she at, but then also academically, like, because we'll have women come in who've never been to school a day in their life. And then we'll have some women who come in and maybe they went to fifth or sixth grade. And even the difference between that's huge. And so looking to see this is where she's at. Can she read and write? And so we have all sorts of training programs built to address wherever they're at. And so we kind of view it as, you know, we want to take a woman from where she's at and move her forward and help her achieve her potential. So, you know, some women might come to us at 16 and, that's a lot easier to start training them in computers and social media and all those things. But then we might have some women who come to us in their late 50s and they haven't been to school ever in their life. So what it looks like to train her, that woman might not join our accounting program, but for her success might look like we have women who couldn't read or write, and then they learn to read and write enough to help their children do their homework. And they're so thrilled to be able to help their children. And so we just try to, we don't have like the standard of like, she has to achieve this level. I think it's looking at each person as an individual and where are they at now? Where do they want to get to? And how can we come alongside and partner together to help her get there? And so we have our classes and things running, but we also see very much that having experience on the job is really important. And so we take a lot of women who aren't necessarily ready for a job and help them move into that job. So we have a holistic care department who will come and see, okay, this is the role we need to fill. This is the woman we think can fill it, but these are the gaps that she has in her skill set right now. and they try to help either find courses or actually do the courses, find volunteers, whatever that might look like, whether that's Photoshop classes or, basic accounting, or we even do basic math, you know, kind of all different things, but kind of fill in those gaps for them. And then likewise, we have other things that we just also have regular kind of clinics for, budgeting. You know, I find budgeting to be a huge problem, but can make a huge impact on somebody's life. And then we have parenting classes. Most of the women we work with are moms, and even young ones. We found some of our 16-year-olds already have 3-year-olds because they were married off at 12 or 13. So we're regularly teaching parenting classes and just trying to provide that different support from all the different angles.
I love this ecosystem that you've created, like of just like you're consistently developing the workforce and empowering women, and then they're moving on to mentor and empower other women. So that's wonderful. And how many survivors do you currently, I guess, employ, and how many have you served since the inception of Starfish?
Starfish, we have a total of 95 employees right now. About 80 of those, I would say, are survivors of human trafficking and exploitation. And then over the years, we've employed several hundred. In addition to that, we've had a lot of women that we've helped either leave the brothels and return to their hometown. Maybe they didn't necessarily want to come work for us, but we try to help them return to their hometown. Or we've also had a lot of international cases where we help like repatriate them to their home country. And so, yeah.
Incredible, Jenny. I mean, that is incredible. Just the numbers on how many survivors you're employing, and they're just paying it forward daily. I love your jewelry. So I would say, like, before we leave for today, like, is there a piece of jewelry that what was like, the, like, just from the creative aspect, when you were first developing Starfish project, and you're like, okay, we decided we want to do a jewelry adornment. How many pieces did you have then? And now you have quite a collection of Starfish project. But in the beginning, what was that like, that process? And again, traction and excitement building for this purpose and mission that you have for Starfish.
Yeah. Well, I think for us, the jewelry has always been an important piece of, we've always said we want to create a really beautiful product that people feel proud to wear, regardless of the story behind it. And so we also have really, I think it's really beautiful packaging, and we have like gift sets, and we really want when people open it to feel like this is something really beautiful that's high quality and very giftable, because we love when people are able to pass it on and share the story with their friends. And so I think it's really such a cute giftable item already packaged in these cute little boxes. And that's kind of developed over time. But I think from the beginning, our purpose has always been, you know, we want to create products that the women themselves feel dignity about. We often talk about how we don't want a pity purchase, you know, where people just buy it because they feel sorry for you or just because it's a great story. I think we want to have products that are beautiful and high quality, and you would buy them anyway. But the fact that it has this incredible message behind it and this incredible impact is like massive bonus. And so,
sorry, go ahead, continue.
Yeah. So I think the jewelry for us is really that. And I think when the women see people wearing it and loving it and feeling proud to wear it, that gives them dignity as well. And then likewise, all of the photography we do. So if you go to our website, all of the pictures you see, whether that be pictures about our projects or pictures of the jewelry, those are all created by women in our program. And so everything we do, we try to have really high quality, because even the photography, we want people to feel like, this person is a great photographer, not just because they're a survivor, but because they do great work, you know?
No, 100%. I would say, yes, I received I got a gift from Starfish. And I will say the detail, the craftsmanship to the pieces, they are beautiful. And I like what you said about not being a pity purchase, because this is a very positive centered mission as well. You're part of the solution, and women that come into the program are leaving more empowered, and they're creating better life skills for themselves and how to sustain themselves beyond their past trauma. So for me, it's like, yeah, I would never consider this a pity purchase by any means. And it's just really beautiful jewelry, and it is high quality. And I think as a CEO and a founder of a social enterprise, how do you like balance the impact over profit? Like, how does that work? Like, I mean, I'm sure you have to make those tough decisions, you know. Could you speak to us on that?
Yeah. Yeah, it is funny, you know, people always like complain. I have three teenagers and they're like, what am I going to use math for? And I'm like, I use math every day, because it's amazing how you get in something to help people, but we're sitting there running the numbers to make sure like it's profitable. And but yeah, I think, you know, we've definitely decided as a company, we're never going to be like, We don't want to be like the cheap throwaway option. We want to be something that is like quality and that people feel like they can hold on to. Even the packaging, we're like, it's a nice enough box that you can turn around and reuse it for stuff. People will tell me the kinds of things that they use it for. And I think that's been more our lane of trying to not necessarily always compete on like being the cheapest option, but trying to be a brand that is something that's meaningful and something you feel good about gifting somebody and also having that impact. But yeah, social enterprise is challenging. You know, you have this huge impact and you see the needs around you all the time, and you just want to help as many people as possible. And then there's always these very real limitations of resources. And, you know, when we take on a woman, we're agreeing to her salary for a long time. So actually recently, we've really been talking a lot about how we move people on from Starfish Project. And so in the next phase of our development, we're discussing how can we start incubating businesses and having women be able to start their own businesses from Starfish Project and move on. And so also, and then some of the skills that the women have been learning, we want to be able to provide those services for other social enterprises or other businesses. So their photography that they're doing, we can shoot any types of products that you need. The women are doing product photography for us, but they can do it for any business. And so I think the next stage of our development is really about using those services that they already have to build out more opportunities for women, more revenue streams, and then as they learn to work for other people, hopefully be able to start their own businesses, and we can kind of incubate them in that.
Incredible. Jenny, I know you're doing amazing work in Asia. Do you see yourself establishing accelerators, incubators like Starfish Project, other countries and other cities where there's need? Obviously, unfortunately, this problem is not isolated to one region of the world. It's unfortunately prevalent all over the planet.
Yeah.
You see yourself expanding into other markets and communities?
Yeah. So I would say like where we're at, the need is really great and there are very few people working in this space. So that's why we've kind of focused here. But we've also been forming a lot of partnerships. And one thing I have seen over the years is, you know, when you find people who are like-minded and already have the heart to do the work, if you can come alongside and figure out how to work together, you can really multiply the work versus everybody trying to do their own thing. And so there's a group in Europe called Threads of Hope that we're entering into a partnership with to try to expand our work into the EU. And so I never thought we'd be like working in Greece, but we're going to be working with an organization there that's already based there, and they can help us distribute our products there. But meanwhile, we can also be helping them to employ more women that they're reaching out to. And so I think for us, we've just seen the power of partnership. And, you know, I think trying to send people into a place that maybe you don't have expertise or experience in might not be the best move, but finding people there who already have that heart that you can really work with and figure out how to together multiply your impacts, I think is probably our approach in the next season. In the UK, we launched our distribution in the UK last year, and instead of you know, finding a distribution company or something like that, we partnered with a nonprofit that is helping people vulnerable young adults, a lot of young adults on the autism spectrum. I have a child with autism, and so really touched my heart. We send our jewelry to them, and then they ship it out for us, and it provides training opportunities and job opportunities for young people there. And so I think just looking for those opportunities to partner together is more how we'll continue to expand and kind of multiply the impacts.
Yeah, that's incredible. Greece, UK, I love that you're taking this everywhere because we are a global community. And I mean, the need is there. And this is what I love about social enterprise and social impact is that, yes, it's sustainable. We can do this. We're a global community. Collaborative. Where do you see Starfish in the next decade? What would you hope to do more with? I know we talked about globalization, like threads of hope, but what personally would you like to see with Starfish in the next 10 years or 5 years? Maybe 10 years too far, maybe five.
Well, I think, like I said, for me, what often gets me out of bed, you know, it's exciting to see girls just start a new life and seeing girls work on the production line. It's great. But what really excites me is when I see them step into those careers, whether that's photography, graphic design, you know, accounting, sourcing, whatever it is, like when they see I've achieved more than I thought I could, that is so exciting to me. So I think for me, providing more and more of those opportunities. And like I said, being able to, I think in the next phase, we really want to be able to open up what the women are doing and be able to open that up for other businesses to partner with them, to see them start their own businesses. And then hopefully as women move on from Starfish Project, some of the women who worked here and started their own business can be the next place that women from Starfish are hired into. And I think I would love to see, you know, Starfish incubated businesses be able to be independent and hire women who have been trained up at Starfish Project and see them be successful. So I think that's really the next phase. We found that like lower level jobs will get women out of the brothels, but real careers is what help women stay out. And so that's really my heart for the next season is to see that develop.
I love that. And I totally feel like it's going to happen. You have a great sustainable model there. Do you ever see yourself sourcing Starfish Project jewelry into other storefronts? Or is that something you have, or just privatized it to Starfish Project?
Yeah, no, we actually already sell. We do partnerships with some other brands. So we're selling like on Macy's.com, and we have sold in Barnes and Noble's bookstores and their college bookstores. And so we're always very open to partnerships. I think those large partnerships really help us. We started a partnership with The Chosen. We've been making products for them under their brand, and they've sold incredibly well. So large partnerships like that are super helpful for us to expand our mission and also provide like really stable employment. So we're very open to working with other brands.
That's good to know, because I'm just saying, because it is beautiful jewelry, and I know you have a wonderful website, but I was just like, you know, more people know about it, the more people you serve, the more people we can give back, because it is an ethical enterprise, and your purchase to Starfish is like helping a whole community of women get out of a really negative situation. So I love that. For many founders, the path to creating impact-driven work begins with a personal calling. So you definitely, this is your personal calling. How have you sustained yourself in the sense hard times? Like, are there any, I guess my question is, for women founders, women in business, and specifically social enterprise, if they also have a call, like what advice would you give to them if they're like, you know, I want to make a difference in this area. I want to start this. What would be some tips or pointers or just good sound advice coming from Jenny McGee, the Starfish Project? Because you've done amazing. What would you tell someone who's starting out or wants to build a social enterprise?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing people ask me, like, what do you think success is? And I think success is really just not quitting. I mean, most of, I think it can, Yeah, there's so many challenges that come. And I think if our expectation is that it's going to be a smooth ride and really easy, then it probably won't last long. But I think if you kind of go in knowing it's going to be challenging, but like have a really clear understanding of what your calling and mission is, then I think it's easy to get over those difficult times. I've also heard, you know, over the years, and I'd say in my younger years of leading, people would talk a lot about how lonely leadership is. And I think I really like accepted that on the front end. And at some point I decided like, it doesn't have to be this way. And so I think even with our team, I've just tried to create a really strong team, but I feel like we're all very open with each other and very supportive of each other. And so I think having that team that you really trust and really rely on, and I think is really key to the long term. And also being able to be willing to be open and vulnerable, and sometimes that might mean getting hurt. And but I think if we're always worried about like self-preservation, then we never form those deep connections that like really sustain us over the long haul. And so I would say just be like open and try to build out those strong relationships with your team, but then also having strong relationships outside. I have some people that I talk to on a regular basis that are completely outside of Starfish and more just for my own mental and spiritual growth, you know, connect with them. And I think having some people that I don't have to necessarily, you know, they're not my supporters or my board members or people that like you necessarily have to, I don't want to say perform, but, but, you know, you can just be totally honest and share your struggles. And I think having some key people like that to walk with you over years, not just months, but people who will walk with you for those years, I think is really important. No, but I also think you really have to be proactive in seeking that out. I do see a lot of women saying like, well, I don't have a mentor. And I'll say that all the mentors I have in my life, I really pursued them. And so I think that's always my advice too, is really pursue those mentors in your life and don't just expect them to like show up and be there for you. You also got to really show that you want them and need them and be willing to meet on their time frame or, you know, like, but really like make it a priority to have those people in your life.
No, this is great advice for aspiring social entrepreneurs. I think, right, like showing up and seeking mentorship and showing up prepared and being proactive in your mission and laying out the foundation. I think this whole hour we spent with you, Jenny, has been so insightful and empowering. I just, what you've done with Starfish Project is incredible. And not only have you created a wonderful, sustainable business model that's like paying it forward consistently, you have amazing jewelry pieces. And I'm really happy that we're able to have this deep dive with you. Before we say goodbye, we have a reflective question. Although I felt like this whole episode is very much reflective because I learned so much from you. I mean, I'm just, it's such meaningful work. So I feel like this whole episode is reflective, but I'll ask you one more question. What does it mean to be kind in today's world? Like, what do you think practicing kindness is, or what do you think kind means anymore?
That's a really deep question. But yeah, it's interesting. Maybe I use slightly different word, but some years ago, I thought about what I was really called to do. And I really felt ultimately I'm called to love, which I think love and kindness are very much tied together. Because I went through a season, actually during COVID, we were working so hard and so stressed and just trying to keep the business afloat. And they were really challenging times. And I remember this one day in particular. I'm a quite relational person, but I can also be fairly task oriented when need be. And there was a season where I had somebody come up and ask me something. It was one of the survivors. And I thought, I don't have time to talk to you. In my head, I thought, I don't have time to talk to you. I need to help you. I'm busy helping you, you know? And I just thought, oh my gosh, you have it all wrong. And I realized like I was really missing the point. And I realized if I don't have time to stop and really like love people well, what is this for? And I think that was a real shift in my heart of realizing like, you know, it's not about just finishing the task, but if I don't take the time to really like listen to people and just be present with them, you know, then I've kind of missed the point. So I think for those founders, I think we tend to be pretty like task-oriented people. But, you know, usually it's out of this mission that you start it. And I think not losing sight of the people in it. So, of course, like you can be so busy helping them, but do you actually have the time to sit and like talk and sit and hear where they're at and sit and just be with people? I think for me, that's been at least my journey, and kind of maybe that's easier for some other personality types. But for me, I think slowing down and just like being with people and eating with them and, you know, being present and available for them, I think for me is my act of kindness and love, I guess.
No, definitely. Yeah, it is. And that's a beautiful explanation. I think all of us can take from that. I mean, I think it's really easy to get lost in the daily routine and not take time. And I think, yeah, that's very important to hear. Thank you so much, Jenny, for sharing your incredible social entrepreneur journey, an excellent system of care and empowerment and adornment you've created with Starfish Project. We're grateful for your heart-centered mission and your beautiful joy. I was going to say, if today's episode moved you, we encourage you to explore starfishproject.com and how you can also turn empathy into action by purchasing one of their beautiful pieces. And they're also on Instagram. So you can go to starfishproject.com for all your holiday shopping this year and know that your gift continues to give. Thank you so much, Jenny, for joining us and sharing this wonderful mission and purpose. And can't wait to see what you do in the next few years. You're already doing such amazing work. We're so excited.
Yeah, thank you. It was wonderful to be with you. I really enjoyed it.
All right, slow divers, this is Farida, and I hope to catch you at our next episode. Make time to listen, reflect, and connect, and follow us also on Instagram, Slow Dive Podcast.
Hey there, slow divers. This is producer Drew once again. Just going to remind you to head over to starfishproject.com and enter that promo code SLOWDIVE20 for 20% off your first order of $25 or more. Offer valid now through January 1st. Thanks for listening to The Slow Dive. Please be sure to subscribe and give us a positive review wherever you get your podcasts. The Slow Dive is hosted by Farida Rafiq and edited by Drew Franzblau. Our theme music is Dive by Ciro.